Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
That's enough of that noise, huh? Who needs it anyway? How about a little music?
Sure.
Let the midnight special
shine a light on me. I love Credence. So you had a big scare up there, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Let the midnight special. Want to see something really scary?
Minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of April in the year of our Lord 2011. I give a drawing near that ye might be amused and informed on this Tuesday. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. It's 503-505-6964. If you would like to get on board and engage with us telephonically with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, train, pain, goat, boat, whatever it is you might have. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Or you can not. You can email if you please or if you don't please. You can also email Dawn Taylor. That is D-A-W-N, Dawn, at rickemerson.com. Text box over on the website. You can Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show via Skype, as did a guy whose message is now lost to me. Well, whoever you were, thank you, and Godspeed.
Is that the guy who just said,
Hell? Hold on a second.
Ooh.
Hold on, I turned down the bigifier there. I'm sorry, what?
Is that the guy who just said, lol?
No, that was a, you know, here's the thing about lol, Don. It's just, hold on a second. Let me back up here. I got two different things to say about lol. One is that at the end of Legion of News just now, as we were wrapping up that show, I had to restart my my computational machine because I tried to load the sound from that damn... that GM woman who's, you know, I was just wondering why there was just a duh. Whatever it is that she said, the woman about getting the, you know.
That's crazy.
But how, like, the tsunami in Japan is inconveniencing her because they have to wait for gaskets or something to arrive at the General Motors plant. And I wanted to have that on the soundboard. And so I, you know, and the soundboard that we use here is pretty simple. It's pretty easy to drag and drop. It's very basic. But every time I try to add that goddamn piece of sound, it just locks the entire machine up for some reason. It's like it's accursed. So I went to reboot everything here. So I was just, you know, opening the email and sifting through some things. But at the end of last hour, the soundboard had been sort of locked up, and I thought, well, screw this. I'm not going to try to play like five sort of sound bites over each other as we sometimes do at the end of the show, where it's like the theme and the ticker tape and the whatever and the, you know, the thing and the other thing, and then the thing says, hey, coming up, Rick Emerson. And so Don just sang, and I'm going to excerpt that out and use it for something in the future. So we're singing the Legion of News theme, which is why I think I had the reverb all cranked up, and it sounded fantastic. But then a guy just sent me a single, it was just a one-word email after that, and it just said, lol. And I'm assuming that that is in reference to your the amusing way in which you regaled everybody with your your rendition of the Legion of News theme song. And so here's why that's interesting, though. Let me just I got two emails here that I wanted to get to before we did anything else today. The first is from Debbie, from listener Debbie, and the subject line is today, and then it says, Rick, today is my 50th birthday. I have listened to the show forever. Even listen to how she immediately is putting the sort of impetus on me. She is putting all the requirement on this side of the table here by saying, today is all the obligation is immediately just heaped on my narrow, bony shoulders. Rick, today is my 50th birthday. I've listened to the show forever, even though no one else in my life quite understands why. So therefore, I am now immediately like in her debt. I am in hock to her, which I am.
I alone am keeping you afloat, Rick Emerson.
We're there but for the grace of Debbie. Today's my 50th birthday. I've listened to the show forever, even though no one else in my life quite understands why. But I love the Rick Emerson show. She's really kind of a kiss you and then cuff you kind of a woman here. I've listened to the show forever, even though no one else in my life understands why, but I love the Rick Emerson show, and I demand recognition. And then there's a really angry emoticon.
Wow.
It's like an emoticon of the red skull. It's like just this tiny, tiny, squinched up crimson face that's vibrating with anger. So, you know.
You have paid me tribute!
Bring me your finest cheeses. So, I guess happy birthday, you know, or whatever.
Or else.
Maybe your present could be just mellowing out a little bit, I guess. So happy birthday to Debbie. 50 years clearly has not mellowed you one bit. Life hasn't tamed you, dear.
Don't want to crush Debbie.
Cut you.
God forbid they get her the wrong kind of cake.
Seriously. Let's see. And then Travis emails and says, Rick, recently you played a sketch that sounds like a Monty Python sketch regarding a group of actors who are superstitious about saying the word Macbeth. They instead refer to it as the Scottish play. Hilarity ensues when a man keeps saying Macbeth. What is the name of the sketch? Tried to find it on the Intertron, but I could not find it. That is from the television series Blackadder. A fine Britcom. That is Blackadder. Blackadder. That is from Blackadder, which it ran for four seasons, or series, as they say, across the pond. That is the four-season show. And I believe that is from the third season of Blackadder, but I could be wrong about that. Blackadder is a fantastic show starring Rowan Atkinson, who then unfortunately found famous Mr. Bean, which is just, you know, that's like Chuck Berry just having like My Ding-a-ling Bee. That's like if you only knew Johnny Cash from A Boy Named Sue. It's just unfortunate.
I never understood that, by the way, because one of the great, it would be like Eddie Izzard deciding that he was going to play a character who didn't speak.
Yeah.
You know, because the great thing about Rowan Atkinson, both in Blackadder and like his sketch comedy.
His verbosity.
Is he has just such a brilliant way with words.
He has a fantastic delivery, and he's a great writer and a very skilled deliverer of words. But maybe that's it. Maybe he wanted to stretch his acting muscles. Or I don't know, maybe he had kids. If you have kids, you suddenly start churning out crap.
He also suffered from just crippling depression as well. And I'm not sure if that had anything to do with some of his career choices. But I know that he was he's really suffered from just debilitating depression. So
thanks for bringing the room down, Dylan.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
There you go. Sorry
about
that.
So
but Blackadder, brilliant. Genius.
Blackadder is really, really great. It is a four-season series that ran in Britain. And I believe the seasons are called like Blackadder the First, Blackadder the Second, Blackadder, it might be even the Third, and then Blackadder Goes Forth is the name of the final season. And
if you like Hugh Laurie on House, you'll be just stunned and amazed to see him on Blackadder.
That's the other thing, is that like, yeah, if you watch House, you know who you are, or you're just sort of familiar with Hugh Laurie on House, where he has, you know, a very neutral middle American accent, or a New Jersey accent, I guess, depending on how you look at it. Hugh Laurie, of course, is a British actor, and when you see him on Blackadder, I have known people that have never seen an episode of Blackadder until I show it to them, and it just blows their minds, because they are either only dimly aware that he had, you know, a British accent, or they just thought he was an American actor, as did, by the way, the creators of that show. I mean, the guys who created House, when they saw Hugh Laurie's audition reel, they thought he was an American actor. Who's the guy that created House? What the hell is his name?
The guy who directed X-Men, isn't it? It's Bryan Singer?
No, he's one of the producers, but the guys who created House, they were looking at all of the sort of, you know, they were looking at all sort of the auditions, and they came across Hugh Laurie's, which he recorded in the shower of a hotel room. And he just sent, you know, he's like, here I am, you know, in the shower of my hotel room. Here I am pretending to be Dr. House for this audition. And all right, then. And then he, like, sent off his audition tape or whatever. And he did the whole thing, including his introduction, in an American accent. He didn't use his British accent at all. And one of the producers on the show, who is British, watched Hugh Laurie's audition for House, in which Laurie is using the New Jersey accent. And one of the producers, who is British, said, well, it's a shame we don't have actors like this in Britain, which is sort of awesome.
And yeah, if you watch Blackadder, though, in series three, he plays the Prince of Wales as just this insane, idiotic, effeminate fop.
It's just a fop, yeah.
And he's so brilliant.
He's actually in, I'll play it as we go into the next break. Whenever we do our, whenever we break here in like, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes or so, I'll play that Macbeth clip because you actually hear Hugh Laurie in there as well. Because the actors show up and Atkinson is the butler and he's goading them by saying Macbeth. And at one point, Hugh Laurie as George says, well, it was like that play we saw with that guy who did that thing, you know, or whatever. And it's like you're listening to it. And even knowing that Hugh Laurie is British, when you watch that and watch House, it's a sign of how skilled an actor he is that I never confuse the two of them. In other words, that I never have to stop, you know, they never drift together. I never have to stop and go, wait a minute, okay, hold on, this, I'm not watching Blackadder, this is House. I never see Hugh Laurie. I always see either George or I see House.
Have you seen the Jeeves and Wooster series that he did with Stephen Fry?
I went back and watched it because you had mentioned it, because I'm a big fan of Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie, but I'd never seen them together, except on a couple one-offs. And so I went back and watched that at your recommendation, which was fantabulous. Anywho.
We like Hugh Laurie.
He says, what is the name of the sketch? Anyway, so it's from Blackadder. And then he says, this is listener Travis, who, you know, unlike listener Debbie, doesn't just fill his email with passive-aggressive quasi-threats urging me to, like, stand on top of a building and announce that it's, like, National Travis Day or he's going to burn my house down and kill my family. He says, bonus question, what is meant when you add LOL after announcing spoilers? Is that a 1% thing or something? So that's when I say, so last night on House, spoilers, lol. Thank you, loyal listener, Travis. Here's the thing. I don't really know where that came from. That was...
I think you're just mocking the internet.
Well, I'm not really mocking the internet because it's like, it's not like I... Do you ever type lol?
No.
Like even like if you do like a, like if you're like on Skype or chatting or something?
No.
See, I will occasionally do it if I'm talking to somebody that A, like if I, here's the thing, I'll do it when I, the same reason I use emoticons. If I'm talking to somebody that like emailing or whatever with somebody that I don't know real well and I'm thinking that there's a chance they'll misinterpret what I'm saying. Like if I've had, not even business correspondence, that's the wrong way to put it, but you know, like somebody that you were dealing with for maybe quasi business purposes, you know. Well, like you know, I'm like, yeah. Like so, you know, these the like some of the book folks like in New York, like we kind of know each other, but not really. And they may not underappreciate my unique comedic sensibilities. And so as a result, when I email them, I will say like, so anyway, blah 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 blah. That's what the nun said in the room with the penguin. Wah, wah, wah. And then I'll put winky face, clown hat, or whatever, just so they know that. I'm not really saying that I had untoward relations with a nun, because that would be foolish and weird. So I'll do that occasionally. But there was a guy, I think it was this guy James Robinson that we used to work with at CBS. He was the one who actually would occasionally, in response to somebody saying something funny, like I'd say, yeah, so then I just said, no, those are just the tacos. And he'd go, ha, lol. And then he'd kind of go back to typing or whatever on the internet. He would sit there in the studio at CBS and he would actually do... Sometimes he wouldn't even make eye contact with me. He'd be typing away and I'd say, so anyway, so then Laika said, dump that bitch. And he'd go, ha, lol. And just never breaking eye contact with the screen. And it started off as a zany thing and then I just think it stopped being ironic. It was just a thing he said. So the spoilers lol thing, though, I think that may be Aaron Duran. I think that Aaron Duran was just... He was drunk... or something, and probably just drunk. And but I think he was talking about something. He was referring to something he'd seen online or reciting some sort of message board, whatever. But to underscore the point of like how it was just a bunch of internet gibberish, I think he did just string a bunch of internet, you know, terms together. And I think I seized on spoilers lol for some reason as being especially funny, like those two words, one right after the other. And so now it's just a thing I say. It's like the goddamn, the stupid welcome to day 12 thing, which is now just like some crap that I say just because I always say it.
And I have no idea why you say that, but I decided I would just look like a rube if I asked.
No, you
so
can
I
ask.
Just let it go.
No, here's the thing. It's like there's so much garbage on this program that we just say for no reason, just because it just became part of the common verbal currency of the program. The welcome to day 12 thing is from Bob and Doug McKenzie, the 12 Days of Christmas. You know, whether you know three French toast and a toque and whatever.
Yeah.
But when they get to the 12th day of Christmas, they you know on the 12th day of Christmas, and then they stop and they say, "Hello and welcome to day 12." And so that's just a thing that I said like 17 Christmases ago on some radio station somewhere. And then I said it, I don't know, I guess all through the Christmas. And then it just crept in as like some, you know, just some nonsense that just, you know, it's like so much verbal Mrs. Dash sprinkled over the meal that is the Rick Emerson show. So there you go, Travis. So that's so that now you're no 1% or no more. So the spoilers lol thing I think came from Aaron, but it's just a bunch of internet gibberish. The sketch is from Blackadder. And happy birthday to my new best friend, Debbie.
Debbie.
All right, so there you go. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday. If you'd like to be part of the program today, you can. But, you know, just think real hard. Maybe we'll pick up on your vibes. Nazi
or you
watch.
Can just sit back and let us do all the work.
Yeah, let's see. You can just, you know, just sort of relax and let it wash over you like some sort of a salve, like some sort of a like a verbal massage.
Just lie back and think of England.
By the way, speaking of massage, that's who the message was last hour. I said that I got a voicemail from it just said from Portland, and apparently it was from the place that I used to go to get massages back when I did those sorts of things, because there was a massage place right across the street from CBS. You know where CBS radio was on First, and then there was that Plaid Pantry and the liquor store. Right between the Plaid Pantry and the liquor store, a massage place. And so I would go over there in the...
A real massage place or a massage place?
I don't think that massage places actually exist anymore.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they probably do. I mean, just not here. Like, I'm sure that you could probably go and get one of the special up-close and personal massages. I wouldn't know where. I don't even think those masquerade as massage parlors anymore, because I think the man is onto that.
Yeah.
I think that's a...
And we don't really need to do that here. We've got... lingerie modeling.
Well, we've got that, too. No. There was an actual massage place. It was called, you know, I don't know. It was like the Portland area massage and special touch or something. But Portland good touch. And it was the thing is...
Happy fingers.
And it looked so terribly trashy because it was in, again, it's like between a Plaid Pantry and a liquor store in like a tiny little strip mall on First. But it was actually a really nice place and very reasonably priced. But I haven't gone back there for some time because, again, it was across the street from CBS and I'm just not that in that part of town very often. Except to take my dry cleaning into a tiny Asian woman who calls me Richard. She has this weird French thing. Like, she's French, but only when she's saying my first name. It's like, and then she just goes back to having a Japanese accent. It's all very weird. But they were calling to remind me that they're still there, and they've been missing my business, and it's half off if I book a massage this week,
wow.
Which I'm probably not going to do.
Oh.
But just in case anybody was curious as to what sort of voicemails I receive. Anywho, Nazi Watch coming up today. Cannibal Watch, Clown Watch coming up as well. Speaking of Aaron Duran, I hear tell that he was going to grace us with a Week in Geek, but that... That may not actually be happening, because I'm looking right here in the inbox where he was going to be delivering the Week in Geek via MP3, so that all might be informed as to the Nerdadley is happening in our fine city. But that's doesn't appear to be there. So we'll that may or may not be the case later on this hour. We might hear from Aaron Duran. So Week in Geek possibly happening, but definitely Clown Watch, Cannibal Watch, Nazi Watch, and some horrifying photos for you all to look at. Plus, we read this on Fun Employment Radio yesterday, but we'll read it again today. This is the single best email we received, sort of as a recap of the entire filling in on KPAM thing. I had a fantastic idea for a chick-lit movie / book. Let's see, what else? Oh, and right as we were getting ready to do the show, Dawn was muttering under her breath, Michael Bublé. But for some reason, I thought you were just saying poopy to yourself out loud. And it took me until like the second or third time to figure out that you weren't doing that.
I wondered why you were looking at me so strange, and I thought, you know, maybe it was just, I mean, just the fact that I just kept saying Michael Bublé and giggling to myself, I figured that was reason enough.
No, it sounded like you were engaging in some late-life toilet training on the other side of the table.
Oh, no.
I was saying
Bublé.
Who's a good girl? Who makes a poopy? Right. Is sort of what it sounded like from over here. But
who makes a Bublé?
Yeah.
Come on, you can make a Bublé.
Plus, in addition to all of the above nonsense, Don Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Tuesday.
A Oh, well, we've got the alleged mastermind behind the 9/11 terror attack is going to be tried soon. Casey Jordan, Charlie Sheen's porn star friend, talks about his most recent public appearance on his big concert. And authorities stop a woman in a at a traffic stop and then have to make her put her clothes on.
Okay. It's 503-505-6964. All of that plus a litany and variety of things that you can't even begin to imagine, that really you can't even conceive. But before we do any of that, the killing, huh? Huh?
The killing. Oh, my Lord.
Come on.
Yes.
So I got a text message from you last night. It was, what's his name? Billy Campbell?
Billy
is that
Campbell.
His name? And so, now where would I know? Is it the Rockets here?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
he's
what I thought.
He's the fella we were talking about where I said I used to work at the Renaissance Fair
right.
with him. So I have been manhandled by him.
I didn't put that together that it was that he was in that because to me, for some reason, he always... Well, first of all, let's have no bones about this. They... Let me just back up. Before we can do A, let me do like a small two, just before we get to the A. If you're not watching The Killing on AMC, really, your life, and I don't mean, I'm saying this lightly, your life is poorer for it.
It's magnificent.
It really is wonderful. Cheryl said that it has already become her favorite new program. I mean, it is currently, she said it's now like the best thing on the air, in her opinion, that
she's
watching.
And also, apparently it had the biggest viewership of any pilot on AMC other than The Walking Dead.
That's really saying something.
So it's actually gotten some viewers.
It's really wonderful. But if you're not watching The Killing on AMC, you really, really, really got to be watching it. Let's have no illusions about this. They cast that guy because he looks like Gary Condit. There's just no getting around that fact. Also, I always think of him. He starred in a two-part episode of... he starred in a crossover two-parter between Homicide and Law & Order some years back. And it is the episode of Homicide that I've seen more than any other, because Homicide isn't really... The Homicide Life on the Street, which is a great show, isn't really in syndication anywhere. You can't really... it might be like on Court TV or some crap. But they don't really show it just on like regular cable like they do with like Matlock or some crap. And so... But they do show Law and Order all the time. But because it's a Law and Order Homicide crossover, to preserve the Law and Order continuity for the Law and Order audience, they are obliged, like every 3 or 4 months, to show this one episode of Homicide on whatever channel they syndicate Law and Order to. So I've seen that particular episode of Homicide more than any others, and he's in that too. And there's this whole creepy, weird plot about he and his wife and a JonBenet Ramsey sort of a thing and a... Sort of a lot
oh,
of a
I do remember
bad
that.
Touching
yeah.
with a hairbrush, and it's all very icky.
Yeah.
So I always think of him being that guy, but he's a great actor. And so it has sort of a Tim Matheson kind of look going on. But, I came in yesterday, and I just raved about The Killing, which I watched because Cheryl and Bruce, they tag-teamed me via text telling me, like, you got to turn on AMC right now and watch The Killing. So I watched it from the beginning, came in yesterday, and was just going on and on about it. So your thoughts on it?
Well, I really enjoyed it. And, God, I don't even know where to start. One of the things that I really like about it is that it does something that most American TV doesn't do, which is the sort of thing that we love about The Wire and even The Shield, where it's taking a look at something from a variety of perspectives. But one thing that American TV doesn't usually do is we watch crime dramas and we watch murder mysteries. And it's all about sort of, there's sort of a, what's the opposite of an exhibitionist? What is it when you're...
A voyeuristic.
There's a voyeuristic kind of thing where it's all about us seeing dead bodies and watching them, you know, solve the crime. But it's from sort of a distance. And we get kind of a titillation out of
right.
the death and the blood and stuff. And something that I've been noticing more and more foreign TV series do, British TV series and stuff, taking you into the anguish that is caused by the crime.
Right.
The ripple effect of the effect on the families and the people that are affected by what's happened. And this is just, it's so good because you're getting, you know, the cops who are solving what's going on. You're getting the family of this girl who has gone missing and then is found dead. And then there's this whole
other guy who's kind of under suspicion, the
yeah.
Billy Campbell character,
right.
who is maybe tied up in it, maybe not, you know, probably not, but who is caught up in the whole, because he's running for office.
Yeah, and so it makes it all much more gripping on an emotional level, because it's not just, this girl isn't just a body and it's a crime to be solved. she's a person, and you're seeing, you know, the effect that all this is having on her family,
right,
and everything. Also, it's beautiful to look at. It reminds me, the thing is, it is based on a Danish television series.
Yeah.
And it reminds me a lot of the movie Insomnia.
Oh, I could see that.
You know, was also Danish. And then there was the American remake with Al Pacino, which wasn't quite as good. It also reminds me of a British TV series that I really love a lot that I've recommended to you before called Wallander.
Right. Cheryl said that. Cheryl said that it had exactly that feel. And I have not seen that show, and I really don't know much about it.
And that's also, it's based on a series of murder mysteries by a Swedish author. And it's weird. It's a weird kind of a show in that it takes place in Sweden, but it's a British TV series starring Kenneth Branagh. So everyone speaks English with a British accent, but then every once in a while someone will, like, say a surname or a name of a town.
Mr. Hergenflurgen.
And you realize, oh, yeah, that's right, they're in Sweden.
Yeah.
But it has that same sort of pacing. It's if you've ever seen any, like, Danish films, there is, it's that sort of quiet, gloomy.
Is Swedish and not, you know, not Danish, but it has that same sort of languid kind of unspooling feel.
The original TV series, The Kingdom, the Stephen King series was based on, was like a Swedish or a Danish TV series. And it's the same thing. And there's also this really beautiful, grainy, gray look to it, where this takes place ostensibly in Seattle, although it's shot in Canada. And it's just raining all of the time, and it's really gray and very dreary.
Well, it's a post-Fincher, series. The Seven, and I think listener Jenny actually said that I had mentioned that it was very clearly inspired by Seven, the look of it to some degree. And there are a couple sequences. There was a second sequence, which I can't really remember at the moment, but there were at least two sequences in the Killing Pilot that were, I wouldn't say they were stolen. It seems like they very, very, very clearly were sort of homages. But there were two sequences. One, when the camera is panning right to left from one interrogation room to the next, which is like a shot for shot from a sequence in Seven. And there was something else that was taken from Seven as well. But in Seven, of course, there's the whole thing to where it's raining every single day, except for the very end when they're getting John Doe out in the field. And so it is very, very clearly drawn from that. And Jenny had said that not only does it look like Seven, but apparently when they aired the pilot on TNT, what led into it was a showing of the movie Seven. So somebody else has connected those dots as well.
But also, it's that really great, deliberate, slow filmmaking where it plays like a film, but it plays like a very slow movie that is taking its time about leading you along where it's going to go. And I like that it's, I like as a viewer being treated like I am smart enough for them to take their time telling me the story, that my attention span isn't so short that everything has to be just like, you know, telegraphed in advance or over-explained to me or resolved like immediately. And but also just the fact that they're drawing this out, particularly over the course of like this sort of 2-hour back-to-back two-part pilot they started, where you get to know the family of this girl who has been killed. You get background about kind of what has gone on, so that by the very end of that 2-hour sequence, when they find the place where apparently she had been savaged, essentially, and you are seeing a mattress and blood and a bloody handprint on the wall, but because you have had so much background up to that point of who it is they're looking for and the effect this has had on her family, that just seeing that is just gut-wrenching.
Well, and that's not how they would do it on a regular show. You're right about that. In the regular show, it would start with Jerry Orbach or somebody like going like, you know, well, you know, call the meat wagon or whatever, as he's like shining a flashlight, and they would start with them finding the Dungeon of Horrors.
Yeah.
You know, how great is Michelle Forbes, by the way?
She is.
Who is the husband of Michelle Forbes? It looks like that Donald Logue guy, but it's not him.
No, he's another one of those actors who has done so much television. And he's been around for a really long time, but I don't know what his name is.
The cast is really good. I mean, top to bottom.
The woman too, who stars in it, is so unusual, and she's so unusual looking for a main character in a TV series, a woman, and her character is so wonderfully free of just being sexed up.
Yeah.
That she is,
you know, without being butch. She's not even really butch. She's just sort of like a cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a woman who is doing her job.
Right.
And that's so refreshing and so great.
Yeah, and you don't get the sense that they're like artificially grubbying her up either, where it's like, let's get the hot girl and put her in a slightly grimy plaid shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just, you know, and it's not that she's de-sexed or whatever. She's just like a person at work doing a job.
Right. And she's dressed appropriately for the job she is doing.
Yeah, like a guy would be.
Right.
You know, like any male character. You know, here's the thing, that guy, that like DJ Qualls looking guy who plays her partner, he could see, he's another play where that show could become terrible with him, and yet they managed to avoid it, even though that to me, that's very clearly modeled on the Somerset Mills relationship in Seven, the Morgan Freeman, you know. And it's like, well, I just came, you read about the things I did in Vice, and you know, and Somerset, who's getting ready to retire, is like, no, don't care, last day. But he's really good, and they do that thing at the end where he's doing that weird seduction thing with the underage girls and the fake, what is obviously, I think, fake pot to try to get them to tell where the kids party at. And it was so creepy.
Yeah.
And yet kind of great. And you're sort of like rooting for him, even as he's being this like weird faux molesty guy to try to get information out of these teenage girls. And it's just a weird, weird sequence.
Yeah, that great thing of, he comes from narcotics.
Right.
And so that's the kind of thing you do.
And undercover narcotics at
that. Yeah, that's the kind of thing you do to get information. Whereas she's very much the straightforward walk in and just ask the questions and do the job thing. He's like thinking of the workaround, because that's where he's coming
How
from.
How great is that sequence? And there are no spoilers. Lol. But by the way, apparently spoilers lol. Our friend Thomas Gill says, hey, spoilers lol came from Aaron Duran talking about Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, because Aaron, on this show, Aaron said, quote, oh, and Anakin becomes Darth Vader. Spoilers. Lol. And so that is, in fact, where that came from. So thank you, sir. how great is that sequence, and they show it twice, where that I get chills actually thinking about it. They talk about a beautifully photographed sequence where they're taking the car out of the swamp. And they just have that shot suddenly from miles away where you just see the two lights in the sky. And it's just so beautiful and creepy and horrible.
There is some amazing cinematography in this thing. There's a shot when they're at the school, and it's from the roof, and it's looking down.
Right.
And you see the two cops, like, just in the schoolyard.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hopscotch stuff. But it's kind of at a weird angle.
Yeah.
And it's just gorgeously done. And the end, when they're in the basement, and this sort of panning thing going across. There's a lot of really great camera movement in this. It's just slow movement of the camera where you've got the people in the frame, but the camera is sort of slowly moving along. You know, I don't even know how to explain it, but it's moving along the scene, just ever so slightly moving a few feet from, you know, like right to left or something. And it just keeps, considering since everything is sort of languid and quiet, you know, and the music is so strange and haunting.
And doesn't interfere, though. And it's not distracting. It doesn't take you out of it or anything. Also,
there's just a flow and a rhythm to it that's just mesmerizing.
Well, that's the thing, is it is very, I mean, it just pours out like some horrible thick molasses of a show.
And you've just got this constant sense of vague dread, even when nothing particularly frightening is happening.
It's like the whole show is taking place in one sort of, like, dank basement, you know? And you're, like, waiting for the stepfather to come home and beat you with a belt or something. And you just never know when it's going to happen. And it's not like I don't love, because I do, you know, shows like Homicide or The Shield especially. But, you know, that whole, like, jerky, shaky cam thing that The Shield did, I think, probably more than any other show. I love that, and I'm okay with that, but it's nice to see somebody doing something different.
And this is like the polar opposite of this, because this is all just very slow, and there's a quietness to it. But the camera is almost, there's an awful lot of camera movement, but it's very slow, sort of horizontal camera movement, as if it's just this, I don't know, it's this deliberate attempt to sort of keep things, you're gliding.
Right.
The whole thing feels as if you're just gliding through this story.
I'm glad that it's on. I'm glad that it got a huge audience, first of all, because I have never been one of those guys that, like, you know, where I like the cult show that only I know about. And maybe I was like that at some point, but I think I stopped being like that when my show started getting canceled. So now, I have moved on from the whole, like, you know, not wanting my shows to find mainstream. I'm all for my shows finding mainstream success that I watch, because then I get more than one season of Freaks and Geeks. you know, or something. So I.
This is another one of those things, though. It's incredibly frustrating, though, because it was so good that when it ended, it's like, I gotta wait a week now.
Well, that's
I know
thing.
That every week now I'm gonna be feeling like that, just going because it's
and I don't
it's
have the
13
patience
episodes.
To wait. Is it 13?
Yeah.
See, and I'm not gonna have, and I'm like you. It's not like I'm gonna be able to wait 4 months or something and then try to watch it all at once. I mean, clearly, I'm gonna have to watch every episode as it comes out. Let's see. Jenny weighs in and says. They do a great thing of not showing the face of the dead girl when she's dead, certainly. You see a photo of her on the wall, I think, but they don't ever show her face in the morgue. They just show her fingers and her hands and whatever. So you can project onto it, you know, a daughter or sister or friend or whatever. And she says, by the way, the investigator reminds me a little bit of Gillian Anderson, you know, sort of, you know, or like a plainified kind of Dana Scully to some degree.
She must be a little bit of Ron Howard's daughter as well.
I don't even know who that is.
She was in The Village.
Yeah. Do you see why she kind of reminds me of that chick from Winter's Bone a little bit, though?
Yeah.
She has
yeah.
that kind of like country girl, you know, sort of a little rough and tumble around the edges or whatever. And then that guy, and then Callum Keith Rennie as her husband, her fiance, who I love. I love that guy.
I love him, but ever since, you know, Battlestar Galactica, he just creeps me out so much.
Yeah. It's so if you guys are not watching because that'll be a thing that we now because it's going to be Sundays. Is that when it's going to air?
So, yeah.
So that'll be our Monday morning recap. So we'll be recapping that Mondays during the show, The mm-hmm. Killing, which it's on AMC. And again, you really, 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 really ought to be watching that so forth. Let's see. Do I have anything else to get here right here in the beginning? Okay, I'll just have this. I'll just mention this chicklet idea that I had, and then later we'll do some. Later, I'll point out the creepy photographs, and we'll do the letter about our KPAM thing. We'll do some news here in a second, and so forth. I had a great. I don't even know where this came from. So I had this. It's because Laura just finished reading Cavalier and Clay, and then she read something else. She read Cavalier and Clay. Oh, and then she read Watchmen because she was on kind of a comic-esque kind of a kick, and you know she sort of. Not that she's resisted, but she's just never really read a comic. She's never really been much of a comics person. And so she read Cavalier and Clay, and she's like, I wish to know more about these funny books. And so she had asked about The Watchmen, and I said, well, and I considered making her read a bunch of comic books first, and then I thought, I don't care that much. You know, it's not like I'm, serious. It's not like, you know, this is partially that we've been together for like, you know, 13 years or something. And also just that, like, I'm at the point in my life where I just don't care enough to, like, I no longer have to, like, you know, set the room in a certain way and, like, unplug the phone and, like, turn down the lights and then give her a long lecture about some movie and then let her watch it, you know, and whatever. Like, you know, I just, like, say, hey, watch this thing. And if she likes it, she likes it. If not, you know, whatever. But so I gave her a little bit of a background on Watchmen and why it was sort of important. And, you know, not that I'm, like, some authority on it, but, you know, sort of why it was a deconstruction, whatever. And then she read Watchmen. And after that, she said, well, that was really good, but, wow, I really need something where somebody doesn't die or get cancer or, you know, or there's no raping or, you know, ship sinking in the middle of it, you know, to sort of, you know, I need something that is without buzzkill. And I said, well, I don't own any of those books right now because I just finished The Book Thief, which is the other thing that I was going to recommend to her.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I got this book that takes place during the Holocaust and it's narrated by the Angel of Death. And it's, oh, no, probably not what you're looking for. And I got this book about Patti Smith and Robert Mapplethorpe and their doomed love and the heroine. No, garbage. So I had nothing for her to read. So she went and she picked up some. All I know is that the font on the front of the book is all swirly. And it has a picture of an ice cream sundae. And it's something about a woman who probably works in the fashion industry or a magazine finding, you know, some lad that she...
She works with a guy, and at first she, like, really hates him because he's really arrogant. But she's inexorably drawn to him. And then they're thrown together by circumstance and have hot sex.
Right. And then at the end, she launches her own... She launches her own endeavor in, like, whatever interesting field she happens to work in. So, I don't know. But then I was just making some snarky comment about chicklet. And I came up with the greatest idea. Oh, my God. Okay. So this needs to be a chicklet novel. And then immediately, of course, or probably concurrently, a movie. Did you know this, by the way? So that Facebook movie that Aaron Sorkin wrote, The Social Network. So here's an interesting thing. It wasn't even based on the book by Ben Mezrich. They apparently were made at the same time from the same, like, 14-page treatment.
Really?
So Mezrich turned in the 14-page treatment to his publisher, and then the publisher was so convinced that it was going to be money in the bank, as indeed it turned out to be, that the publisher just sold the 14-page treatment to Paramount or whoever for, like, $9 jillion. And so Mezrich was writing the book at the same time Sorkin was writing the movie.
Must be nice.
So that's a weird... We're living in a strange time. But anyway, so the idea for a chiclet thing is a woman meets the author of her favorite chiclet series, and it turns out that it's not really a woman, it's a man, probably Aaron Eckhart, writing under a woman's name. And the man has decided to write a series of chiclet novels, as a to make money, and also as his passive aggression towards females who he believes to be trite and shallow and utterly predictable and mundane. And so he just reduces women to a series of banal cliches and has turned them into a best-selling chiclet series. And he needs a woman to go out to pretend to be him on the lecture circuit.
Oh.
And so he hires this woman who, of course, a struggling theater actress, because she wants to audition to be the role of, like, Beatrice whoever, to go, of the author. And then, of course, she finds him to be a callow cad. But then they end up falling in love, and there's a series of zany misadventures. And then the book slash movie ends with, of course, the latest project, which is a book that the two of them have jointly written together. And then the book is probably... And then the book that they
this
write...
This is how you and Joni DeRoshi started writing, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. There really is no Rick Emerson. That's the thing. I just play Rick Emerson because Rick Emerson is really Tara Dublin. Don't tell anyone. But then, of course, at the end, yeah, they collaborate on a book together at the end. And the book they collaborate on is the book you've just finished reading. So there it has a little sort of, thing at the end.
Yeah.
It has has a little The Outsiders kind of a twist there. So and it would be called. Wait, no. No, I've got nothing.
Okay.
Then, Lara, have you come up with a chiclet idea?
Me?
Or 12?
No.
That seems unlikely. How could you not have come up with an idea for... You're a writer and creative and familiar with the chiclet genre, even if you don't read a lot
yeah.
of it.
I don't know. I don't really think that way.
That's not true because you. It's the same reason that we can talk about what is absent from The Killing that makes it such a great show. You're familiar with tropes and cliches.
Well, I guess it's not true because I did have a screenplay I was working on at one point, and then I was going to write it as a book, and then my friend Doug Holm, the film critic. Made some kind of aspersions about movies like Garden Staters. It's going to be one of those indie movies about somebody who has to go back to their hometown, and it's full of all these quirky characters, and they learn a lesson about family and love. And I went, oh, God, that's what I'm writing.
I'm writing that right now.
Ah, crap. Right. But I did have this piece, this thing I was working on for a while that I guess was kind of, it was chick-lit-ish. It was a woman who... She's left her hometown because her father owned a dinosaur park. Like, you ever been to the prehistoric gardens?
Right.
And in my thing, it was like that place, only her dad was the crazy guy who built the dinosaur park. And the whole time she was growing up in her small town, she was dinosaur girl. And so she left and she came to the big city, like moved to Portland or something. And then her father is dying, and so she has to go back home and then decide if she's going to keep the dinosaur park or sell the dinosaur park. And of course, she hates the dinosaur park because she was tortured the whole time she was growing up. But then through her talking to her warm yet wacky neighbors, she again appreciates the small town life and finally embraces her family and stays and rebuilds the dinosaur park.
And that woman would be Ashley Judd.
Right.
See, I've seen you say...
And that was originally going to be a screenplay. That was going to be my indie movie screenplay.
See, how is it... that's money in the bank there. That is...
But then when Doug Holm went, it's going to be like somebody goes home and they have to... And I was like, oh, God, I'm doing... Oh, my God. What I'm writing is like a trite cliche. The only thing that makes it at all different is dinosaur park. If you took out the words dinosaur park, I have just written a big pile of trite.
The key to writing a successful chiclet in my experience, the swirly font. That's the most important thing of all. And then to have a title that really doesn't have anything to do with the content of the book, but that have the title that sounds like something you'd much rather read. You know, like there's that chick-lick book, like the Big Bad Wolf Tells All.
Yeah.
You know, the book isn't actually that. That's a book I'd like to read. And so you kind of settle for the book that has that on the cover. Or The Girl's Guide to Hunting and Fishing. You go, well, I'd love to read that. I guess I don't have that, though. That doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll just get this book that happens to be named that. Or there was a book that came out like a year and a half ago. It was something, it was like the... I don't know. It was like, you know, Secrets of a Cad or something, or, you know, like, Confessions of a Serial, you know, Philanderer or whatever. And it was just, you know, and you go, well, that sounds titillating and exciting. And of course, it's just the same crap inside. It's just girl publishing industry, blah, 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 callow, blah, 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 misadventure, blah, 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 happy rapprochement at the end.
Yeah.
So here's another one. This is, and then we just came up with like nine of these inside of 5 minutes. So then she, of course, on the heels of losing a lot of money to, I'll just say it was Aaron Duran, who for some reason showed up at a girls' poker night. Lol. He was the guy who was all drunk and just playing without looking at his cards.
Oh, see, don't you hate him a little because of that?
Yeah, you know. And it's like they were at a girls' poker night, and then Aaron just shows up and here I am, I'm drunk to play poker. I'm not even looking. Yeah, you know. And ended up taking her for, you know, I don't know, a couple of hands in a row. So she was not happy about that. But then the next idea she came up with was, of course, a book. The other thing that chick-lit books are really good at is authors writing about women who are authors writing about women. And so she would be writing a book about a woman whose life project, the woman whose project would be a book in which she teaches other girls how to understand men by using poker. And it would be, the title would be something about, like, it would be something about women's poker night. I, of course, suggested that the title be changed to Two of a Kind.
Oh, yeah.
See, there you go. And then so it's about a female card shark who's using her skills, at the table, because, you know, like so many women, you know, she has her career down pat, just can't seem to find a man, and so her life is incomplete. And so it is a woman trying to balance her career, which, interestingly enough, is poker, which is typically a man's world,
nice,
trying to balance that with being fully rounded individual, you know, by which we mean, getting a little, And so then she ends up learning to resolve the two, and then writing a book about it, blah, 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 poker skills, da-da-da, landing a man. We should just form a company where we just give people trite two-sentence ideas and then they go create them. All right, let's get on that.
I'm actually kind of fascinated by that poker idea, though, because I can see this actually working. That
of course
it could be multi. It could be
that's
multi.
The genius of it.
And as she's writing the book, and then she actually starts realizing that the poker skills apply to the art of love.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right. I like that idea, actually.
All right. Just remember that came out of Rick Emerson's mouth here at 2:15 p.m. on Tuesday, April 5th, 2011. There you go. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. But let's do a couple of these stories, and then we'll take a break. And I'll play that Blackadder thing here for listener Travis. Just for you. I'll play that going into the break in just a moment. But first and foremost, it's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's start with a cannibal watch, shall
we? Here's your cannibal watch for... Yes, yes, I know, poker, I barely know her. Yes, it's your cannibal watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program. There we go. All right, here's Dawn Taylor with your Cannibal Watch.
Okay, this story via The Guardian in the UK. Police in Pakistan have arrested two men for allegedly digging up a newly buried corpse and eating its flesh in a curry.
Okay, where?
Pakistan.
And in a curry. Well, I guess I could have fallen. All right.
The two brothers are said to have cut the legs from the body of a 24-year-old woman and cooked the flesh in a steel pot. Some of the dish had already been eaten when police raided the brothers' home in a remote part of Punjab province.
Why? Okay. Never mind. I'll save my questions to the end.
Okay. A senior police officer, Malik Abdul Rahman, told The Guardian that the brothers had been eating corpses for at least a year, but some local media reports alleged that they had been human flesh eaters for at least a decade. Raymond said the brothers, Muhammad Arif, 40, and Farman Ali, 37, seemed to have taken up cannibalism as an act of revenge after their mother died and their wives left them. Raymond said it became an addiction for them. They boiled the flesh first, then cooked it in a curry. The investigation that led to their arrest was launched after the family of a 24-year-old cancer victim named Syra Parveen visited her tomb on Sunday, a day after her funeral, to find the grave had been dug up and her body was missing. Police probe led to the brothers' house, where they found the remains of Parveen's body in one room, along with shovels, knives, and other equipment, and the meal In another room. Previous victims.
Well, of course you can't. I mean, you can't have that all in one room. That's unsanitary. Yeah.
Previous victims include the body of a 4-year-old girl, also taken from a local graveyard. One problem for police and prosecutors is that cannibalism is so unusual that there is no specific punishment under Pakistani law.
Wow.
The brothers will be charged with digging up and desecrating a grave, which carries a punishment of only 6 months.
That's like there was some story in Utah when I lived there where like I don't even remember what prompted it. I mean, I guess we can figure out what prompted it. But when I was in Utah, it was discovered that there was no law against necrophilia. Mm. That was when they went to charge a guy for, you know, the buggery. And they went, well, crap. And so then
surely there must be something.
So that was like the one free one that he got. So this wasn't like a sort of like, well, really hungry and the store is way over there. But there's a graveyard. This is sort of like a, we'll show them by eating them when they're dead.
And then they started going, hey. I kind of like this.
It's tasty. So this is, but it's brothers. And this is the thing I always wonder about when it's not just one guy, when it's a couple of guys or like three guys sometimes. You wonder whose idea it was. And if that was just like, is it sort of like, is that the sort of thing like when you're on a date and, you know, and you're trying to figure out like who's going to make the first move. And, you end up in bed together, but you're just not quite sure whose idea it initially was and who leaned in for the kiss.
Well, I also want to know the train of logic that leads from our wives have left us, our mom is dead, we're feeling sorry for ourselves. Let's eat dead people. What? How do you get from wives left you and mom is dead to dig up and eat corpses?
Well, I think the question mark there can be replaced with religion and or God because that's – I mean really, because that's, don't you figure that that's got to be some sort of – that's got to be some sort of consume our enemy and their courage sort
Maybe.
Of a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's because otherwise, really, because there. I mean, I was going to say there's no logical point, and I understand that it's sort of an insane story anyway. But I mean, even inside the realm of like, okay, I'm going to eat a guy, I mean, eat somebody after they're dead. Even if you just sort of get past that, you got to figure for there to be some demonstrable point, they must believe that there is a metaphysical. Or at least highly symbolic importance placed on this. And both of those things, I would think, would come from religion.
Quite possibly.
So, I mean, that's – and also they're crazy. But the – but I mean, especially like hella crazy. Like not just normal crazy. I mean, they're like full-on crazy. They are – they're just plain nuts, I think. But that's – you know, but that was like Ed Gein's thing. You know, Ed Gein had like the really controlling mother. And he's like, well, who's controlling who now? As he's like dancing in her skin under the moon, you know. So, I mean, it's –
And then what's his name? Not Bundy. Wanted to eat the boys so they would never leave him.
That Dahmer?
Yeah, Dahmer.
I mean,
Dahmer. It's like if he consumed their flesh, then they would always be with him, and they would never leave him.
Well, you know, seems like there must be some sort of a seems like there must be sort of in Soviet Russia, something mother you.
I don't know.
No, in Soviet Russia, I got nothing.
There's nothing.
No, I seems like a cooking homemade meal makes you. No, it doesn't really go anywhere there.
No.
But that was Gein's whole thing is like he was just, you know, stupid mother, stupid because when they went into Gein's house, the thing they found was that like he had the first thing he did when she died, like they buried her and then he just immediately like sealed up her room altogether. And so the rest of the house was just like a hovel and just, you know, skulls and whatever. But her house was just like her room was as she had left it except there was dust. So he like never went in there again. But then somehow, like, he didn't go in her room again because he didn't want to disturb anything. And yet then it's not, like, shoveling her out of the ground, like, the next day. So it seems like there's a little bit of a disconnect logically. But that does seem to be and you don't really – and that seems to be a guy thing, too. There's not a lot of women out there just going, I'll show him. I'll dig him up and eat one of his thighs.
Yeah.
You know, that's, like, that doesn't really seem to – I think they realize that's a Pyrrhic victory at best.
Yeah.
So –
Plus, ladies would prefer a nice cheesecake.
Yeah,
and there's only so much you can really do with human flesh.
Well, boyfriend gets gamey after a while. You don't necessarily want that. All right, plus you would think if they've been doing this for 10 years, like I got to tell you, like every now and like even that trunk pizza now and again, I wonder if it's doing something weird to my insides or if I'm just going to feel slightly queasy the next day. It seems like maybe they don't then do any embalming or any formaldehyding it, but then you would think that would be worse actually, because then you're just you're having dip sure, of old guy that's been in the ground for 5 years.
Yeah, those chemicals can't be good for you. I guess that's part of the reason you make a curry because it helps, you know, cover some of the taste of the chemicals. But still, it can't be be healthy.
Taste the heat, not the meat, really is what you want there.
Really.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's end that. That's your Cannibal Watch for... Sometimes the Cannibal Watch is a little unsatisfying, like it's just an earlobe or a guy accidentally ingested part of somebody's elbow. But this is really the full nine. One more here, and we'll take a break.
Well, Charlie Sheen bombed his first show in Detroit, but his second show in Chicago seemed to have gone slightly better. Casey Jordan, who was one of Sheen's porn star lady friends, was with him when he went on the drug binge that led to him losing his sitcom. And she said she's proud of what he's doing now.
He's come out of, you know, a really dark place, and now he's, you know, using it towards... this whole comedy thing. He's flipping everything around, and I think that I'm just proud that he's on the right track again.
Is this really the right track? Is this really comedy?
I'm wondering what it is. She says he's using it for the right tiger's blood, presumably. So this is now. Did we figure this out?
Just talking about his crazy. He's using the crazy for the right thing, I guess.
Is Casey Jordan the one who's from Portland? Did we figure that out?
I think so. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I gotta look her photo back up again.
And she said it was sad to see people leaving in the middle of the show.
He's come out of, you know, a really dark place, and
one. Hold on. Here we go.
He was doing so good in the beginning, but then after a while, people were kind of tired because he was just repeating, you know, what he says on Twitter, what he says in all his interviews. You know, he's stretching out, making fun of himself.
An adult film star who grew up in Oregon, says TMZ. So, yeah, this is a really unpleasant photo of her. Hey, here's a little secret for me to you. Casey Jordan doesn't look all that good if you hose her off and get her in a good light. No, do not want. Yeah, the thing about Sheen is, like, you know what's weird is, I think about Martin Sheen more than I think about Charlie Sheen. Because I wonder if Martin Sheen, who seems like a genuinely good guy, and who by all accounts is a deeply, you know, a deeply religious and very moral and upright and very, person who, to whom, isn't she,
You're right. She is not attractive.
No, she's a warthog.
And she also has that sneery facial expression that you just know she is a deeply unpleasant person.
Well, she has that look on her face that models sometimes get as though just off camera someone was holding a full diaper. But
she's horrible.
She really is. I think she's got the big unpleasant implants too, like the big fake porn boobs or whatever. But Martin Sheen is apparently, you know, you hear anybody talk about him and they say that he's a very he's a man, you know, integrity is very important and honor, and he's very religious and very, you know, just seems a genuinely good guy and just wants the best for everybody. And of course, you know, there's that whole thing about, regrettably, where you just apparently can't quit. Some people just have that thing where it's like, you know, if it's your kid, you just love them regardless, which seems like that just hinders you at a certain point.
Yeah.
At a certain point, it becomes a big pain in your ass, the fact that you just can't just renounce them. Like you see those, you know, I have no son. And I get the feeling that if you were a guy like Martin Sheen, you wish you could just do that. Just sort of, you know, just turn off the, having any investment in how Charlie Sheen's life is going. Because it's got to be the worst thing on earth at this point to be, it's got to be worse to be Martin Sheen than to be Charlie Sheen, frankly. Because Charlie Sheen is just like in his own bubble of, you know, he's like in his own Zaphod sort of like, hey, I'm the most important thing in the galaxy. So, you know, whereas...
Yeah, he's having a good time.
Yeah, Martin Sheen, just every time he turns on the television, just, oh, God, you know, he can't leave the house, can't go to the store. Because, I mean... Because, you know, then everybody probably either wants to know, like, what's up with your insane kid, or, like, what did you do wrong as a parent, or what are you going to do about that kid of yours anyway?
Yeah.
And just, that's got to be a singularly unpleasant thing right now. Is his, Charlie Sheen's tour, is Charlie Sheen's tour coming anywhere near Portland? Is he,
I have no idea.
Is Casey Jordan's skin literally has a gross Charlie Sheen to it?
Uh-huh.
Followed by yuck. All right.
Lol.
That was the most ironic lol ever. No one has ever lolled with less feeling than that. That was like an inverse lol, which is, of course, a lol.
Yikes.
Wow. All right. You're listening to Legion of... you're not even listening to Legion of News. That would be Lon. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. I'll play the Blackadder thing here for listener Travis. Then I'll be back here in just a few minutes. Stay there. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Is that the door?
Oh, don't worry, it's just the actors.
My Uncle Baldrick was in a play once.
Really?
Yeah, it was called Macbeth.
Actors are very superstitious. On no account mention the word Macbeth this evening, all right?
Why not?
It brings them bad luck and it makes them very unhappy.
Oh, so you won't be mentioning it either?
No. Well, not very often. You should have knocked.
Oh, knocked, you impertinent butler. We're loud enough to wake the hounds of hell. Lead on, Macduff.
I shall. Lest you continue in your quotation and mention the name of the Scottish play.
No, never fear, I shan't do that.
By the Scottish play, I assume you mean Macbeth.
To hold his stores, blood we may come in.
What was that?
You were exorcising evil spirits. Being but a mere butler, you will not know the great theatre tradition that one does never speak the name of the Scottish play.
What, Macbeth?
Hot potato officer tours, but we make amends.
Good Lord, you mean you have to do that every time I say Macbeth?
Hot potato officer tours, but we make amends.
Will you please stop saying that? Always call it the Scottish play.
So you want me to say the Scottish play?
Yes!
Rather than Macbeth.
Hot potato officer tours, pack we make amends.
Say, what is all this hullabaloo? All this shouting and screaming and yelling blue murder? Why, it's like that play we saw the other day. What was it called?
Macbeth, sir?
Hot potato officer tours, pack we make amends.
No. It was called Julius Caesar.
Oh, yes, of course. Julius Caesar. Not Macbeth.
Trying to survive, hop on Mulholland Drive. He's got the phone in the car in his hand. Everybody's trying to be a friend of mine. Even the dog can shake hands. He bombs 20% because he knew you back when. Now they all want a piece of the band. Everybody's trying to be a friend of mine. Even a dog can shake hands. All the worms and the gnomes are having lunch at Le Dome. They're all living off the fat of the land. Everybody's trying to be a friend of mine. Even a dog can shake hands. We'll do the rest for you. Find a way to make it pay. Don't lose your head. You'll end up dead. Or you'll be killing in the valley someday. For the fans, everybody's trying to be a friend of mine. Even a dog can shake hands. Woo, yeah. Sign page 42. We'll do the rest for you. Find a way to make it pay. Don't lose your head. End up dead. You'll be living in the valley someday. I'm trying to see.
listening to the Emerson News Network.
You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program made possible by... and then there was a thing I was going to play just now. Here's the thing. I doubted myself just now. There was a thing I was going to play immediately following the Blackadder segment that we just saw, the little Macbeth sketch there. There was something I was going to play, and I did not believe that I, in fact, had it on me. And so I went on the Intertron to try to locate it. And, you know, and in the meantime, I was playing a little Warren Zevon there and Tinted Windows. When in reality, couldn't find it. Imagine this. I couldn't find it on the internet. I mean, I don't even know the last time I used that phrase. But you know where it was? It was here on my computer the entire time. I, in fact, had it in my virtual back pocket.
Oh, Rick Emerson.
It was like a pair of binary spectacles perched on top of my electronic head. The whole time,
oh,
Don.
You.
Anyway. What was that? Was that a little,
That was a little
snarking at me with that wah-wah?
No, it was the sad music. Wah-wah. Like that. Kind of like that.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if you were doing a lol,
no,
sort of a...
No,
being a flat, effectless wah.
No.
Okay. In any event, I found it. So we'll play that here in just a... it's going to lack all the comedic punch now if I'd played it after the Blackadder thing. That's okay. What was I saying? So this radio program brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. 0-9. They can locate whatever it is, whatever the boggle might be in your wiring. If you've got a sort of a figurative gremlin, not so much on the wing of your plane, but inside the walls of your home, which would really be, I mean, that would be decidedly unpleasant. Oh, my God. Speaking of gremlins and horrible things. So you haven't even seen, you don't even know this photograph that I'm talking about.
No, I actually saw that you posted on Facebook, but I haven't looked at it yet because I was waiting for you to give me the...
The high sign?
The go-ahead.
I got two of them. So one is posted on Facebook. The others are, they're both posted in the visual aid section at rickemerson.com/pictures. But just, let's do that right now. Speaking of things lurking in the wings of the plane. So go to Facebook and then don't click on it quite yet. This is listener Steven who sent this to us. And the caption was... Hey, the deep sea, now with 40% more terror. So if you go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson, or if you go to rickemerson.com, or if you go to the visual aid section at rickemerson.com/pictures, basically everywhere, I have posted, this is a real creature. This is an actual creature that lives underneath the sea. This is called a hatchetfish, which, by the way, just something called a hatchetfish is like...
Yeah, I know.
That's, you know, that's nature's way of saying... That's man's way of saying that nature doesn't want us anywhere near. You call something a hatchetfish.
Right.
So are you prepared to see this?
I am prepared.
Okay, so now imagine... This music is totally inappropriate for this. Hold on, let me see if I have something... let me see if I have something that's creepy. No. But imagine, so there you are, you're underneath, the waves, you're swimming along. It's a lot of, pitch black, cold, icy water chilling you to the bone. There's, what are those things you ate yesterday? The bushworms or flatworms or...
Bristleworms.
Skivworms or, yeah, bristleworms. Imagine maybe you fought your way through a horde of bristleworms, and then you landed on an asteroid, turned out not to be an asteroid so much as you're in the alimentary canal of a giant space creature. Then you finally say, here I am back in the ocean, I'm safe and sound, there's nothing in the ocean that can harm me or bother me in any way. And then you see this creature and his friends looking right at you.
Oh!
That's what I'm saying.
Oh!
Yeah.
You know, my God.
Here's the thing. They're not so much looking into your soul as they've already taken it.
Oh.
They've consumed your soul. Aren't they like a... They're like a...
They're like skulls with fins.
They're like an ichthyological dementor.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
No, and I'd never seen those until this morning, and I wish I hadn't seen them then, frankly.
No.
So everybody else, you can go look at that.
I don't want to look at that anymore.
That's at rickemersonshow.com. Thank you.
Just haunt your dreams.
Listener Steven. There you go. Wouldn't it be great if you just had some of those, like, around, and you could just put them in a friend's swimming pool? That's like a gag.
There you go.
You know? Everybody, come on over. We're gonna do some drinking and hang out in my pool tonight. And then just, you know, when nobody's looking, hatchet fish into the pool.
Oh.
You probably wouldn't be invited back, but it would almost be worth it. So that's brought to you by Squires Electric, squireselectric.com, or 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, I can make your life easier. Squires Electric, proud sponsors of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Those are deeply unnerving fish, aren't they?
Yeah.
They kind of look like a an undersea version of what are those things from Buffy? The gentlemen who are just sort of the quiet episode? Just sort of big, dead, soulless eyes. But they don't even appear to have eyes, is the thing. There's just sort of holes there where eyes will someday go after they steal them from children.
But then I followed that up by looking at a picture of Kelly Clark and her husband with their baby.
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned that. We want to congratulate Kelly Clark and her husband, David. They now own a baby.
Well, she
makes it sound like they just took it out of a, like they just, like they just got it off a train somewhere.
She birthed a baby.
Yes. She produced a child. Why can't we talk about this like normal people? There's no way we can't find a way to say this. It doesn't sound weird.
Because we love Kelly Clark and we're happy for her, but you and I are both just fundamentally horrified by the entire idea of childbirth.
And also, I just don't, yeah. So in any event, so they have a kid now.
They look very, very happy.
They didn't before. Is that a photo of all three of them? I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, it's on the Facebook.
All right. So of course it is. Does the child already have a Facebook page?
I don't think so.
All right. So and their daughter, who I believe they were naming Alex.
Yes.
So there you go. So congratulations to Kelly Clark and to her husband David and to Alex.
Alex Lily Gaston.
Alex Lily, really? Is it Gaston or is it Gaston?
Gaston.
All right. So, welcome to Welcome to Earth. You're going to be here a while. So, you know, just get used to it, I guess. Also, there are things called hatchet fish. Stay away. They want your eyes.
Welcome to life.
They want your eyes, Alex Caston.
Welcome to the world. Hatchet fish.
They look sort of like slea stacks, says this guy, and that
they
is totally
do.
True.
Oh, my God, they do.
And not the talking kind that wear robes and talk about Altrusia.
Oh.
So, no, they're the bad kind.
Swimming slea stacks.
Yeah, so, see, why do you even...
Slea stacks of the sea.
Okay, but why do you even need to say that? Like, it's bad to say, well, these fish kind of look like slea stack. Why do you got to go swimming slea stack on me? Slea stack of the sea. That's the worst... the worst delicacy ever. Slea stack of the sea. And then it's just, you know, a can with just a hissing reptile on the side of it. Jesus, you just open the lid and there's a thing inside going, you close it again.
No!
I'll have pasta instead. All right, here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Oh, let's do our clown watch.
All right, because we're not freaked out enough.
This isn't a scary clown watch really so much.
Really?
No, it's a, yeah.
All right, hold on a second. Let's just as a sort of like, as a sort of what would the world be like? Let's see if I can.
Are you trying to Photoshop like slea stack faces onto fish?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going to do. No, I was going to do sort of a, what is that? There's that that comic book from Marvel, I think it was. It was the What If or whatever. And it was some sort of like, you know, what if Superman had landed on Mars or something? And what I was going to do is I was going to try to conjure a what if in some alternate reality we were using that music from that alternate Clown Watch.
Oh, yeah.
Music that I was playing last week, but I think inexplicably, I think I didn't bring it with me. I don't know that I actually saved it. So we'll do it the way we always do it. Here is your clown watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Last week on Friday, the Frankston City Council ordered that the Great Moscow Circus remove giant inflatable clowns and promotional signage from the front yards of homes because they didn't have required permits. The illegal immigrants, as they called them, they were clowns, giant inflatable clowns, were rounded up by the circus and detained at the Big Top site at Samuel Sherlock Reserve in Craneborn Road, Frankston, this is in Britain, for the duration of the visit, which ended on Sunday. However, some were taken on promotional outings around the city on the back of a truck, where a permit was not needed. On opening night, 2 days before the council's local laws department said no and ordered the circus to take away the clowns, the circus handed
the
mayor
clowns.
A check for $13,000 for the city's community fund. The circus always gives the first night's takings to the local council's favored charity. Great Moscow Circus General Manager Greg Hall said, "The vast majority of councils we visit don't require permits, and we didn't know we needed one for our giant inflatable clowns in Frankston. All comments we've received from the public have been favorable.
There's so much wrong with this. Like, first of all, the first night's takings sounds like some horrible tribal thing where it's like they would just, it's like a village somewhere where they tie you up and they leave you out in the middle of a field because you've pulled the wrong slip of paper and the clowns are coming that night and they require an offering. Also, what do you mean when you say the clowns and later you said the illegal immigrants?
Oh, that was just, they were being cute.
Oh, I see. So this was their humor.
They were trying to be
funny.
Oh,
I see. They're being kooky.
19 promotional inflatable clowns have had their share of adventures traveling around. Oh, I'm sorry. This is in Australia. They've been traveling around Australia. One of them was actually stolen from a front yard in Alice Springs. And another time when they were in Washington here in California, they stole. The one that was stolen in Alice Springs turned up at a golf course 2 weeks after the circus left town. He had a sign around his neck complaining about his work conditions.
Okay.
I was going to get the photo of these inflatable clowns and post it online because they're kind of horrible. They're not as scary as they could be, but they're just huge. They're just enormous. They're like two stories high, and they're giant inflatable clowns.
Really more clown than anybody needs.
Yeah.
More clown than is probably called for.
And they
for.
Think that that's a selling point, really,
no,
for their
no,
circus.
I
but I like
so.
The fact that the town just went, no, you do not have permits for these inflatable clowns. Remove them.
These clowns are illicit. I won't have them.
Right.
All right, there you go. There's your clown watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Thank you.
There you go.
Giant inflatable clowns.
Hey, so speaking of giant inflatable clowns, we're really not speaking of that at all. Speaking of the creepy Sleestak fish that we just showed, so you should look at the second photograph now. Okay. So if you go to, everybody, let's play the picture pages version of the show. Go to rickemersonshow.com/pictures. That is Rick
I'm
Emerson.
I'm going there right now.
rickemerson.com/pictures. Go to visual aids for today, which is April 5th, 2011. That is visual aids, April 5th, 2011. So there's the Sleestak fish. You've already seen those. But there's a second photograph, which I've just captioned, Ted, don't turn around just yet. You might want to click on that so you get the full sort of. So now, Greg Nibbler and I were talking about this because somebody sent me this photograph. Sarah and I were doing this one-upmanship this morning where I said, hey, look at this photograph of these Sleestak fish. And she said, I'll see your Sleestak fish and I'll show you a shark captured in the background. And it was where a mom was taking a picture of her kid playing on the beach, and in the background was like a shark like swimming along like high, you know, out on the like five feet off of shore. And then I said, I'll see your shark in the background and raise you like five hyenas lurking like just beyond a guy's, you know, beyond a guy's backyard patio or wherever he is. So here's the thing about this picture. Greg and I were trying to figure out, first of all, what are these creatures? Because they're large.
They look like female lions.
They are. And then I was like, well, how did he not notice these? Or did the guy taking the photograph not notice them, you know, at the time until they developed them? And Greg pointed out they are probably only illuminated for this split second because of the flash.
Yeah.
That when the flash was off and then when the flash was back off after the photograph, you probably couldn't see these. But when you get a chance, everybody should go to rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for April 5th, and look at this creepy photograph of this guy.
Well, I see camp chairs, and it looks like a tarp thing. So he may be like out camping in the savannah or something and unaware.
Bad idea.
Unaware that there's a bunch of lions lurking in the dark.
Or yeah, maybe or maybe coyotes. I guess they're not coyotes. They look like they could be hyenas or jackals or...
They look like female lions.
I don't really know what a jackal looks like. And also, I don't know where the picture is. But this, it doesn't seem fake in any way. This seems pretty real. And, you know, who really knows on the internet? But it does... I'm wagering that this is probably real and that... There might not be any photographs after this on the roll, but I'm just speculating. I love the idea, though, that maybe they didn't even notice it then when they took the photograph, and it wasn't until later when they were sort of developing it in the lab, you know, and you just sort of see the thing in the background.
I like the idea that maybe they took a number of pictures, and then the next one, they're all just a little bit closer.
And the next one, it's all the hyenas posing wackily with the corpse. Hold on, I don't have a thumb. Let me find the button. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Getting a budget approved is necessary in order to avoid a Friday government shutdown. But what about the debt ceiling, Rick Emerson?
What about the debt ceiling?
U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner told congressional leaders that the U.S. will reach its $14.294 trillion debt limit by May 16th. And what would happen if it is not increased?
Default by the United States would precipitate a crisis worse than the one we just went through. I think it would make the crisis we went through look modest in comparison.
Oh,
duck
modest.
Soup. Oh, okay. Modest. Okay. All right.
Geithner told congressional leaders that it's time to get real and increase the debt ceiling because if it isn't, the country could default on its obligations.
It's time to bring it.
All the leaders of both parties in both houses of Congress have reaffirmed the importance of making sure that this country, the United States of America, will meet its obligations. Of course, that requires Congress to act in a timely manner to increase the limit. If we take no additional actions, we run out of room on May 16th.
This guy sounds like a wormy little douche. You know what he sounds like? He sounds like that tall, skinny guy he's not the lead character in The Loop, but he's one of the American attaché. The guys, and he's sort of he is the opposite number to the lead, to the female lead, and he's just like a little Hogwarts bastard.
Yeah.
Also, does the story say what the debt ceiling actually? Because the debt ceiling is the amount of money past which we have promised ourselves, honestly, really this time, Daddy's going to quit drinking, that we're not going to spend beyond. It is the limit beyond which we will not have expenditures.
Sure, whatever.
Does it say what it is?
No.
There's no actual.
Well, $14.294 trillion.
But that's the limit.
But that's it.
No more.
295 out of the question.
No, it's 14 trillion, and then we are really turning off the tap.
Right.
Okay, that's awesome. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Do we have a Nazi watch?
We do.
Ooh, we should do it now.
Okay.
Okay. I'm all giddy. Here's your Nazi watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
A Nazi submarine mission to the United States during World War II that aimed to unleash a wave of terror ended in farce after being hit by a series of disasters, according to newly released files that were released yesterday. The Germans planned to bomb roads, railways, and factories on Operation Pastorius in June of 1942, according to files released from Britain's MI5 domestic intelligence agency. But even before it got underway, the plot descended into a farce worthy of a comedy film. One of the saboteurs, Herbert Haupt, got drunk at a Paris bar after a farewell dinner and declared to his drinking companions that he was a spy. When the submarine arrived in the United States, it ran aground on a sandbar as it dropped off the four agents on the coast of Long Island, New York. A U.S. Coast Guard discovered the Germans as they buried their supplies on the beach, but then he was given $300 and persuaded to leave them alone.
So wait a minute. So let's back up. So the guy was a spy.
Right.
And then he kept his cover by getting drunk and saying, hey, I'm a spy.
I'm a spy.
That's great.
And then when the submarine arrived, it ran aground as it was dropping the Nazis off.
Oh, Heinrich.
Then a Coast Guard came across them as they were burying a bunch of stuff on the beach, but they gave him $300 and he left them be. In a report on the mission, Victor Rothschild, head of MI5's counter-espionage division, wrote, "It was only owing to the laziness or stupidity of the American Coast Guards that this submarine was not attacked by U.S. forces."
They're the nuttiest Nazis in the ocean.
The plot was foiled when the leader of the spies, George Dash, called the FBI, announced he was a saboteur, and demanded to speak to J. Edgar Hoover. His confession was initially dismissed, but after a lengthy interview, he was arrested and his fellow agents were rounded up.
It sounds like the mission was foiled as soon as they put, like, that guy in charge of this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the thing about that story. That story is sort of great. It's gratifying because it makes you, you know, because, they're here and abroad, here and everywhere. You know, there is evil in the world, but it sort of encourages you a little bit because you realize that, like, you know, good, evil, somewhere in the middle. You're probably dumb to some degree. I mean, you're probably on the spectrum of stupid somewhere. And the luck of the draw is such that every now and again, you know, you get, hey, it's a boat full of Nazis, but we're all stupid, you know. And then they're just like driving into the side of Camden, New Jersey.
Whoa.
and now we have done it. You know, and then it's.
If we give you $300. Will you pretend you did not see us?
All your Nazis are French.
My Nazis are the French.
Which I guess sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. I mean, that's sort of a meta kind of comedy. You may have my whole country. All right.
Why are my Nazis French?
I don't know. Well, it's, you know, I Brian Brown isn't from England. So what do I know? You know.
Is... into these tunnels with you.
That was what tunnels?
I don't know. I couldn't think
I don't even know
words.
What you're doing now.
I don't know.
Okay.
My brain just went wacky all of a sudden.
You know what never gets old to me is jokes about France surrendering.
Yeah.
That's a thing
funny.
That – and I know that like after the whole freedom fries and whatever, I mean I should sort of be doing a contrary thing where it's like, well, no, now I'm going to embrace France. And not like I hate France or whatever. I mean not that much. But the jokes about France surrendering, that's a thing that is just going to stay funny like to me at least like until the day I die. I'll never get tired of that. So that and vomit sounds. I mean those are going to be the things I take to the grave. There's your Nazi watch for Tuesday. How's your eye doing over there?
Oh, my eye is fine.
What's in it?
Oh, nothing now. It's gone now.
Okay.
But I had, I don't know.
You had a mote of some kind.
An eyelash or something. No, now I've had a headache. I didn't get any, I got almost no sleep last night. And I've had a headache all day. And now I'm just feeling like weirdly kind of queasy and headachey. And I don't know why. So,
okay.
So I'm just, I'm great though.
I'm
in a good mood.
That's swell. You know that thing going around where he's got the weird dry nose and the cloggy head and the scratchy throat?
No, but
all right, because Greg
sure,
and Sarah
I'll
both
have
that.
Okay.
Yeah, no, because I don't have it either. But it's like they both got the thing where it's just the how did Sarah put it this way, where she was just storing a bunch of sloshy stuff right below her eyes.
Okay.
Sort of a.
Yeah, I know.
You
like.
Tilt your head back and forth, and it's like one of those executive desk relaxers that has like a, you know, like a, has like the ocean waves simulated going back and forth with some kind of blue gel. So that was what she said the inside of her head was sort of like. So, and I'm trying to avoid whatever that is.
So we had this thing last night, and this is part of why I couldn't sleep, I think. Patrick hasn't been feeling well. And, of course, he's got whatever the thing is with his liver, and they're still looking at that, and his kidneys and stuff. And but he hasn't been feeling well, and I've been really worried because last time he wasn't feeling well, he ended up in the hospital.
Yes.
So I'm just kind of, go to the doctor. Go see the doctor. So he went to the doctor yesterday afternoon and said, I'm tired and I'm run down. I just don't feel good. And so they took blood and sent it off to the lab. This was 3:30 yesterday afternoon. I went to bed about 10:30 last night, and about 10 minutes later, I like hear voices in the living room, wake up and come out, and Patrick's talking. Of course, he's talking on the he's got his phone on speakerphone for some reason. Somebody from the doctor called at 10:45 at night.
That's not good news.
To say, oh, we just got your labs back, and you're really low on potassium. You need potassium. Do you have any oranges or bananas?
Run to the fridge, stat.
Seriously. And he's on the phone going, I've got an orange. Well, eat the orange.
Let me hear you eat it. Hold the phone up.
And so, like, so I made him some orange.
What happens if you're really low on potassium?
Like, well, you can have like a heart attack if you have too little or too much potassium. Potassium regulates like your muscle contractions.
Shouldn't he just have that in his body like normally?
I guess if you have some certain different kinds of kidney problems, you can be low on potassium for a number of reasons. A lot of times it comes from being dehydrated.
And just not know it?
Yeah. But the thing is, also, if you have some kinds of kidney problems, you can be low on potassium. But yeah, that's just alarming.
That's unnerving.
To have someone call at night and go, and see your doctor tomorrow and get them to give you like a prescription for a potassium supplement. Because the ones you buy over the counter, they don't give you enough.
Ugh.
So he needs – so now this afternoon we have to go to Walgreens and pick up some super potassium supplement. But that was just disturbing.
Yeah, when the doctor calls you anytime after like 6 p.m., it's bad news. You just don't, you know.
And they're going, and if you find yourself feeling bad, just, you know, go into the ER – and they'll help you out. And I'm going, feel bad how? Feel bad how?
Just go with it. Just if you feel like you can't move at all.
So for the whole rest of the night, I'm going, are you okay? How do you feel? How do you feel? Well, how do you feel? Explain it to me better. You know, I was just like, oh, God. So then I couldn't sleep because I was just all stressed out.
Doesn't it seem like we ought to be at some point where you could just wear a wristwatch that'll just like, it'll test your sweat or something, and you can look at it as like a gauge and be like, well, I'm a quart low. Oh,
I need some vitamin D.
Right.
You know,
it seems like we ought to be, it's like there ought to be something that you can just wear that tells you how many calories you've ingested today.
Well, it'll make you crazy if you start thinking about all of the things that you're supposed to get and how you don't get it. And every time you turn around, someone is saying, you need this.
Right.
And so you should be eating broccoli and blueberries, and that'll give you things. But the thing is, then somebody else, oh, you should also need this. So you should be eating whole wheat bread and drinking milk. And, oh, you need this. So you should be. And it's like, honestly, I'd be doing nothing but eat like all day long to cram all these things in. You're just supposed to somehow know and get it. And it can make you crazy.
This email says, my wife has low vitamin D, was prescribed a 50,000 unit pill to take. Once a week. Most pills have 1,000 units of vitamin D. And it's in one pill. I don't even know how that's possible. So the...
Well, it's like the size of a softball.
It's a salt lick. it's just like a urinal cake that she has to eat once a day. But my old thing is like it's like you get to be an old person and it's like you see your grandmother and they have those weekly, you know, the pill things for the week. Yeah. And it's where every day they're taking like 75 pills. And you just wonder if that's like a gradual thing or if that's like where your doctor adds like one pill every year or so and you don't really notice it until suddenly you're an old guy and you got to take like one of those huge like energy packs from Safeway, you know, or like, you know, next to the register at the Plaid Pantry where it's like the 70 pills at once. Like you get to take that like morning, noon and night.
Yeah, I don't know because when Patrick got out of the hospital, they gave him like 5 different kinds of pills. But the thing is, he only has to take one like more than once a day. So it's not like he needs the thing. He just needs to, like, you know, in the morning just go and this and this and this and this, you know. But yeah, it's bothersome.
Okay. Let me read, because I said that I would, let me read
yes,
this amusing email from, I used to have an amusing email bed that we would put underneath whenever somebody sent something we thought that was worth reading. And then I never was able to find it. And then I just got replaced by the porn bed and then everything got replaced by the Blackula Strikes bed. So I don't really have, let's see if I can just, No, that's wrong. But why is that button even on here? Why do I even have a button on my computer that plays Friday? I got to get that button removed.
Yeah, just excise that right now.
Well, here's your problem. All right. Well, let's see. What am I? Well, you've got this big Friday button on your computer. Who? Why did you ask for the computer that has that? I don't know.
Did you see the
damn
menu?
Microsoft?
It's like it's you know. Well, it's, I asked them to get rid of the. I asked them to get rid of the insert key to put something else there, and so I just you know.
Finally got rid of the paperclip, and now they gave me this.
Hello. It appears you're heading to the weekend. Would you like to be cheered up and put in a weekend mood? All right. Okay. Okay. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Let me see if I can find a little bit of, let's see here. What have I got? Wait. Well, we'll just go with this. Well, that's also not what I thought
it
was. I'm just full of failure. Everything I press sounds like failure today.
Why don't you play that jazzy thing we use for Jim Willig? That would be good email reading music.
Oh, okay, hold on a second. Let me just everybody just busy yourselves with something important, won't you? All right, hold on.
I'll just sit over here and type.
All right, let's see. We'll do this. How about the
paperwork?
All right.
Exclamation.
All right, here we go. Good day, Rick. I'm too mellow.
Too mellow?
Hold on a second. Let me just hold on. How about the? Ooh, we'll do this. Okay. Hold on. How about this? All right. We'll start.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
I don't even know why I own this. I mean, what would I possibly use this for? Well, what would I possibly use this for? You know. And yet, there it is. All right. Good day, Rick. No, stop, Rebecca Black. All right. Good day, Rick. We got this, by the way. I will say first and foremost, this is the single best email that we have received about our 3-day stint on KPAM. Really, this is just better. This is better than anything else. I mean, this is really the best summation of that 3 days. I mean, we couldn't have prayed for more than this and expected to receive anything like it. So, I just it really is quite wonderful. This comes to us from listener Joe. He says, "Good day to you, Rick. I had to let you know about my elderly neighbor, we'll call her Kay, complaining about you filling in on KPAM. Kay and I are part of the Neighborhood Foot Patrol, don't ask, and we were walking a night ago when she brought up Bob Miller being on vacation yet again, her complaint. I asked, 'Oh, have you been listening to Rick and Dawn?' Her response was, 'I cannot listen to those people. That man talks way too fast for me to understand. And that woman, is Dawn what you called her? She was just worthless. I got so angry at them that I unplugged the radio so I wouldn't be tempted to turn them back on. Those two should be ashamed of the foolishness they spoke over the airwaves. They are completely stupid and childish, and anyone that listens to them needs to get checked on by a doctor.' I stayed silent during her rant, and then once she finished, I let her know that I was an unabashed fan of you and Dawn. Upon hearing my counter-rant, she looked at me for a long moment and then turned to walk back to her home. As she arrived at her porch, she looked back at me and yelled, 'I knew there was something I didn't like about you! You people are all crazy!' She then slammed the door, leaving me standing there laughing. Well done, Rick. It's my personal belief that you're doing something right when you can piss off someone that easily. Thank you. I have been searching for a way to get out of this neighborhood foot patrol thing for quite a while now. It appears that you and Dawn just helped me do that by being you and me being a fan. Awesome." It's listener Joe.
That's the third time I've heard you read that letter, and it never gets old.
I haven't even posted it on the internet yet. I'm going to put that up on Facebook later today. It really is fantastic. That's the sort of email. That's what makes you get out of bed in the morning, Don.
It does.
Why you put one foot in front of the other? You're just hoping, praying that comes true. So, excellent.
KPAM.
Let's do one more. And you let's see. So tomorrow, I believe we are going to be joined by Aaron Mesh and his moms and dads. That makes it sound like he's a polygamist. Whatever. His mom and dad, his
what did
the guy
parents.
What did the guy the guy at the spectacle store say to the urban youth? Oh, if you have to go ask your pops for permission, I understand.
That's right.
But Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week and his parents.
His pops and his moms.
That's right. Improbably enough, we'll all be in the studio tomorrow. And then Thursday, Don Taylor will be absent for the day. We'll be joined by Mr. Eric D. Snyder from ericdsnyder.com and film.com, as well as Movie BS with Baron Snyder. And then Friday, Big Jim Willig in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Here is Don Taylor.
Deputies anticipated a detailed traffic stop investigation when they pulled over a driver and smelled both alcohol and marijuana in her car. But before, this was in Indiantown in Florida.
Really?
Yes.
All right.
Indiantown, okay. Florida. The one deputy's before they could proceed, however, they had to ask her to put her clothes on. One deputy said he noticed Charlene Johnson drifting in and out of her lane as she traveled west on Warfield. When Johnson pulled over at the corner of Southwest Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and the deputy saw she was naked, he called a female deputy to assist. From the neck up, deputies said they could see Johnson's hazel eyes were bloodshot and brimming with tears. They later determined the bloodshot eyes had likely had to do with her blood alcohol content of 0.182, which is at least twice that of the state's legal limit. Johnson told them she was crying because of an argument she had with her boyfriend in West Palm Beach, but she had no explanation as to why she was also driving completely naked.
No, but I mean, don't you assume that when you just, like, especially if you're not from Florida and you get a job there, like, there must be a guy who just pulls you aside and tells you, like, what the job is, like, what to expect. You know, it just sort of like, look, this is how it is in our state. And so just don't be shocked by anything that should happen. Just realize that it's a strange place.
Yeah, she had a shirt and a pair of shorts on the driver's side floor. However, she struggled to find the clothes and to put them on after deputies told her to do so. She stepped out of the car with her clothes on, but three times deputies had to catch her because she was, you know, intoxicated.
Yeah.
Inside her Ford, they found 46.5 grams of marijuana and several prescription pills. She was charged with possession of marijuana over 20 grams and drug paraphernalia and driving under the influence. I think I was going to do this story yesterday, and I may have posted a photo. If not,
is she a real prize?
Yeah, she's a looker.
Before we do anything else, let me just, we got another email to read here. Let me just read one more here.
Okay.
This is about yesterday when we were discussing the idea of flying being so unnerving for people and that we ought to get around that by dosing everyone with drugs if they so choose. And the way we do that is by having some dentist just be ensconced on the plane where he could theoretically come by and do a checkup or give you a little cleaning or just hand you one of those, like, you know, just hand you one of those, like, pre-wrapped toothbrushes and tell you, you know, like, you know, after meals. And we decided that Sky Dentist was really one of the great breakthroughs of our time. This guy says, about Sky Dentist. Rick, Sky Dentist is not the worst idea for a Saturday morning cartoon, which I think is how we described it. He said, when I was a kid, there was a cartoon show, and I am not making this up, called Super President. Do you remember Super President?
No.
I don't think I've ever even heard of that. He says, the premise, such as it was, that's a phrase that never fails to make me laugh, because that indicates that you're about to hear something ludicrous. The premise, such as it was that the president had a Batcave-like headquarters in the basement of the White House, and when evil was afoot, he'd don his costume and, huzzah, super president. If you're president, why do you need to be super? It seems like you're already pretty...
And it's not like that's like a really good secret identity, that you're super president and you're hiding by being the actual president.
He says, Saturday mornings were weird when I was a kid. P.S. I'm not kidding. P.P.S. I'm really not kidding. P.P.P.S. No, seriously, there was a cartoon show called Super President when I was a kid. What the hell? I have no I have no information or explication about Super President.
I never heard of Super President.
I got nothing. That's a thing that I successfully avoided, I believe. All right, well, let's do one more here, and then I will play this. I'll play this thing that I had racked up earlier, which was ideally supposed to follow the Blackadder Macbeth segment, and it didn't. But, you know, in your head, just pretend that it is so. Here is Don Taylor.
Okay.
I will not show you this photograph of a spider eating a large bird.
Thank you. Authorities in Las Cruces, New Mexico, say a woman's been arrested after allegedly getting drunk and having her teenage son drive her to the store for more beer. Doña Ana County Sheriff's officials say a deputy spotted a car driving in the area of Delray Boulevard and Thorpe Road early Friday with its headlights off. Behind the wheel was a 14-year-old boy. Authorities say 39-year-old Ophelia Lopez told the sheriff's officer that she drank four beers at home and her son was taking her to the store to buy more.
That's the only responsible way to do it.
They say Lopez failed a number of field sobriety tests. The Las Cruces Sun News says Lopez could face charges of contributing to the delinquency of a minor, allowing an unauthorized driver and negligent child abuse.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's either that or it's just wandering, just having her roam the streets, and you know, kids have got to learn how to take care of mommy at some point, and
She was trying to be responsible. She wanted more beer. She knew she shouldn't drive.
Right.
She knew she couldn't send the 14-year-old to the store to buy the beer.
But if she's there.
But, you know, if he drives her to the store, then she could probably stagger in to purchase more herself.
Well, your mother probably sent you to the store to buy any number of items that you probably shouldn't have been allowed to buy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, mommy needs her margarita mix or Pall Malls or whatever.
Well, Patrick remembers that from being a kid. He was talking about that being like 8 years old and his mom.
With a note.
Giving him like $5 to say, and go get mommy some smokes.
Totally. That was my thing. My grandmother would do that. She would just give me a little note and it would be like, you know, I have sent my grandson to buy me, which really in retrospect is just horrible. I mean, it's horrible in many, many ways that I'm like six, you know, and it's like, and because she had like, you know, like brittle lupus ridden bones and also, you know, emphysema and was unable to stand for more than like 12 seconds, barely able to write the goddamn note. And she would just thrust it into my hands with sort of the like, and get something for yourself, too. And then just sort of hustle me out of the house.
Also, I think for me, the sad thing is me being 15 years old and hearing my mom pull into the driveway. And my mother actually finding this story amusing. She would tell this to others that I could tell from the way she pulled into the driveway and slammed the car door whether I should like leap up and immediately like start pouring her a rum and coke before she gets in the house.
How drunk or angry mommy was that day.
Oh, I better get mommy's drink started early.
It's a double day.
Yeah.
All right. All right then. Well, I'm going to play this thing that I conjured up out of my the vast musical holdings here at the Emerson News Network. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when we'll be graced by the presence of Aaron Mesh and his mom. And Keelan has actually just said in all caps, please stop, please stop. Please stop being black, please. So his mother and father, Mumsy and Dadsy, will be in the studio with us tomorrow. And then Thursday, Eric D. Snyder is going to be in the studio with us from film.com and also Movie BS with Baron Snyder at Cascadia.fm Fridays at 11 a.m. And then on the actual Friday of this week, we'll be joined by Mr. Big Jim Willig for another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Tell Patrick, I hope everything works out okay with his, you know, his guts,
yeah,
and, you know, and his banana fortification and whatnot. Is it really that they just said, like, do you have any? What if he hadn't? Would they have sent him to the store?
The first thing they asked if he had any potassium supplements like around the house, and we were like, no,
because we're not 90.
Yeah, and he said, okay, well, do you have any bananas or oranges? And he's like, yeah, I've got like an orange. She's like, well, eat the orange, and then you know, we actually thought about going out and buying some supplements. And then I like said, well, I looked online and went, or you could just drink down a couple of glasses of orange juice because orange juice has a lot of potassium.
Did they make it seem like if you didn't have that stuff around, like it was imperative that somebody go to the store and get him like bananas, like stat?
Yeah. It was basically they called to that his potassium levels were, you know, alarmingly low and he needed to do something about it like right away.
It's interesting that like they took blood samples and then they called him later at home because you wonder if it's like a sort of a, you know, if it's like the calls are coming from inside the house kind of a thing where like the guy is like sprinting in slow motion down the hallway of the hospital, like must find phone. And then, you know, and then the camera like cuts to just a shot of like the printout and it's like, you know, dangerously within moments of death.
Well, I just imagine they process so much of this stuff just for doctor's offices and go, oh, yeah, and we took some blood. Yeah, everything's fine. Okay, yeah, you know, you could probably cut down on the sugar, Mr. Jump, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like they finally get to Pat's at like 10:30 at night in the lab and the person goes, holy moly, I got to call this guy.
Well, it's like when Letterman talked about going to get his cholesterol tested that one time a few years back. And he's like, so I'm here to get my cholesterol tested. And like the guy, like they did whatever, like a scan or an X-ray or the blood pressure cuff or something. And the guy said, like, you know, well, like we're going to operate. And he's like, well, what do you mean? He goes, like now, like, you know, he said the guy did everything but like reach for his scalpel, like right there. He was like, he said within literally like 2 or 3 minutes. They were sedating him because they were afraid that his heart was just going to blow up right there in the doctor. The doctor's like, you know, you could just drop dead like right now in front of me any second.
I had a friend who's a newspaper writer and he has a really big heavyset guy, and he was he did the fire station beat. So like a couple times a week, he'd go just hang out at the fire station and talk to them and take notes and see what they'd had calls on and that sort of thing. And this one day, he was in there and just sort of on a lark because they were, you know, giving people free blood pressure tests. He said, "Sure, do my blood pressure." They took his blood pressure and they went, "You should go to the emergency room
like
right
now."
And so he went to the emergency room and they were like, "Oh, yeah, it's a good thing you came. This is bad." And the nurse said, "What do you do for a living, sir?" He's like, "Oh, I'm a journalist." She goes, "Oh.
We call it the Widowmaker."
Yeah. It's like, "Oh, hurry for a newspaper." "Oh, OK.
We've got that crash cart standing by." All right. Well, in any event, so thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good and righteous things and peoples. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and guy who didn't show up or contact us in any way, Aaron Durand.
And happy birthday to Debbie, who demands recognition.
Seriously, who demands patronage at this moment, lest she strike us down with a most intense form of fiery doom. So, yes, happy birthday. Thank you for listening. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. It is Tuesday, April 5th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
In her sleep,
she started talking
about the blood that was on her hands.
Clean it up.
Out, out, damn spot.
We'll get him up.
Out, out, damn spot.
Pick it up.
Damn spot.
So if you don't enjoy classic,
cause it ain't on plastic,
then you better think again, my man. Start rapping with the body,
and it won't be hard to find that you can be a Shakespeare fan
with a band.
Shaking, shaking, shaking Shakespeare down. Shaking, shaking. Shaking Shakespeare down. Shaking, shaking.